Okie dokie, folks. Welcome to the Roots Report podcast, presented by Motif Magazine and sponsored by Rhode Island Blood Center, Mother Earth Wellness, Graysale Brewing, Trinity Brewhouse, Ballet RI, and R1 Indoor Karting. I am your host, John Fusick. Today we have Jim McCarty, singer, songwriter, producer, and drummer of the legendary band The Yardbirds. The Yardbirds will be at the Narrow Center for the Arts in Fall River on March 21st.
Is that John?
Yes.
Hello, John. Jim here speaking.
How are you?
Very good, thank you. How are you doing?
All right. Where are you calling me from?
I'm in the UK.
Oh, it says France.
Does it say France?
Yes.
How weird. I thought you were on Skype.
Ah, okay. Maybe that's what it is.
It's obviously said France because I'm registered in France, but I'm in the UK now.
So, you're the drummer of the Yardbirds.
Yes.
And you've been with the Yardbirds since the start. You're a co-founder of the Yardbirds.
Yeah, I'm a co-founder, but we had a long break. We split up in 68, and then we reformed around about 95, so we had a long time off.
The Yardbirds were very influential in early rock history. I mean, the Yardbirds are famous. They've had some great music, but they're most famous for bringing to the world Jeff Beck, Jimmy Page, and Eric Clapton.
Yes, that's right.
I mean, that's amazing that three of the biggest guitarists in rock history came from one band.
Yes, and also they were all pretty well local. They lived within like 20 miles of each other.
Wow. I was watching some videos yesterday, and I grew up in a time when the Yardbirds was still in heavy rotation on music stations before classic rock even came around. It was just music, and they were still just playing good music. It didn't have that classic rock, and it was just good music, and I grew up hearing that stuff all the time, and it was just songs they played. It wasn't, you know, they weren't looking back. They were just playing great music.
Yeah.
And it was fortunate that that's the case, because nowadays, I mean, I don't even listen to the radio anymore, so I don't even know if you're getting airplay anymore, but it was back then, I'm talking in the mid-70s, it was still getting a lot of, you know, you guys were still getting a lot of play even after you'd broken up. You were still getting a lot of airplay, which is great.
Yes, the history was long-lasting, which is nice for me.
You're 81 years old now?
I'm not 81 yet, I'm just 80.
How is it you can still function as a drummer at 80 years old? Isn't it tough on you?
Well, we shall see. I mean, it's not getting any easier. But, this tour is not too many dates, to be honest. There's four land dates, and there's the cruise, which is the Blaubeur cruise, which is quite easy relatively, because you know, you don't have to get back the gear up and drive somewhere after the gig. Go back to your cabin, you know, relax on the sea.
Do you get seasick?
No, it's in the Caribbean. It's very smooth.
Oh, that's pretty tough to be in the Caribbean, huh?
Yeah. So that's one of the perks.
I was watching some of the old videos. It took me a while to find actually a video with Clapton in it, because he was in at the beginning. He was, what, the second guitar player. The first one,
yeah,
kind of didn't stick around very long at all. The very first guitar player, which I don't remember the name, was very short-lived in the band. And Clapton took over, and they each had about a two-year span in the band.
Yes, that's right.
And I watched, and I could see the early blues when Clapton was in the band. It was the blues influence, and then he abruptly left because the band was going in a direction he didn't like. It was getting too like psychedelic-y already and popish, and you were having hits, and he didn't like that. He wanted to play the blues.
Well, that's right, but you sort of had, you needed the hit to expand your audience,
right?
Really. You know, have a bigger profile, and so you had to have a hit record to keep up in those days. Otherwise, you were just, you know, just a club band.
Right. It's kind of funny that Jimmy Page was asked to be the guitar player to replace Clapton, but he turned it down and referred Jeff Beck to be in the band.
Yes.
Because he wound up being in the band ultimately anyway.
Well, he did. He did in the end, yeah, which was... It's a funny story, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, he didn't want to join because he was playing on all the sessions in London, and he was very busy, and he didn't want to go out on the road. But he, it came to a point where I guess he got fed up with it and thought, oh, I'd like to play in a group now.
And from watching the old thing and you know, hearing some of the music you produced back then, you do see the early stages of Led Zeppelin forming right there. I mean, John Paul Jones actually played with your band at one time, and Peter Grant was the manager, right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, John Paul Jones played on. He played on an album, and he played on a couple of singles.
So yeah, you ultimately not only did you give birth to the three of the greatest guitar players, but one of the greatest bands of all time. They actually went as the name of the Yardbirds to start off with.
Yeah, that's right. And it was never going to be right. You know, you could never really call Led Zeppelin the Yardbirds, could you really?
But I mean, I could see like the early version of Dazed and Confused. I watched the version of you know, the Yardbirds playing Dazed and Confused. Lyrically, it was different, but musically, it was very similar to the Zeppelin version.
Yes, I mean, it developed, the way our sound developed, it developed into something that was very close to Zeppelin, as you can see, you know, as you can hear it.
Now, one of the things I did not know, I mean, a lot of this stuff I knew already, I was just, you know, I breezed through it doing some research about the band, but the one thing I did not know is that when you left the Yardbirds, or in the Yardbirds broke up, you were one of the founders of the band Renaissance, which a lot of people don't remember, but I remember. I remember Renaissance as a very cool band back then.
Yeah, that's right. I formed that with Keith Ralph, the singer, and it was quite different. You know, it was quite a different entity to the Yardbirds. It was a different sound altogether, you know.
That was cool. I mean, I did not know that, and that was a band that, you know, it kind of popped up back then, and I used to hear their stuff every now and then, and then they kind of vanished. And it was, they had like, you know, they kind of just peaked above the surface a little bit, but were kind of underground in a way for a long time.
Yeah, so we were prog. It was a prog band, really.
Right.
that was like a new thing for the early 70s, you know, prog.
It was, I mean, like I said, I liked the band. I liked what I heard. I think I saw you folks on Don Kirshner's rock concert maybe the first time.
Yes, you're right.
So, you were part of the British invasion, which, you know, that's nothing to shake a stick at either. I mean, you've got a lot of history in this band. I mean, you are part of a very historical band. You're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. You know, you've got these great songs, For Your Love, Over Underwood, Sidewood's Down, Heartful of Soul, Shape of Things. I mean, those are like iconic songs right there. Those songs kind of molded, were part of the inspiration of where music went in the 60s.
Yeah, it's a very strong repertoire, actually, John. I mean, and it's great to play it now, you know, with a fresh band and with a fresh PA system and all that. You know, it sounds great.
I know you're a songwriter and you do some of the background singing as well, and you're a producer and such. Who wrote a lot of these songs? That's one thing I didn't really find a lot of information on, is who was writing the songs back then.
Well, we did it within the band, and something like Shapes of Things, you know, we all put our bit into that song. So it was a group effort, and also Over Under Sideways Down, Happening 10 Years Time Ago, you know, it was a combination of the band members, Still I'm Sad, but of course Graham Gouldman wrote For Your Love and Heartful of Soul, and Graham that went on to 10cc.
One of the things I read about was the name The Yardbirds. Now, it was kind of, I saw conflicting information. One said that it came from Jack Kerouac's On the Road from a Yard Hobo, and the other one said it was Charlie Yardbird Parker. Which was it, or was it a combination of the two?
Well, the way I know it, it comes from the first one. It means it means someone that lives on a train yard and bums lives across the states, you know, on a railway train. And also, I think they call prisoners Yardbirds, don't they?
I think so.
So that's the way. I never really knew the Charlie Parker connection. Well, I do now, but not originally.
And originally, you were playing like Howlin' Wolf and Bo Diddley and like the classic old blues stuff. Is that? You know, that's where you started. So how did you morph to this kind of psychedelic kind of sound. I mean,
it had a lot to do with Jeff Beck, because Eric would play very bluesy guitar, you know, very straightforward, but Jeff had all the gizmos, you know, and the foot pedals, and he liked to get all these different sounds going, feedback, you know, fuzz box and wah-wah and all that stuff, and he really made our sound quite different, which we loved, you know. We loved being different from just the usual blues band, not so predictable, and making something unique. That was something we really wanted to do. We sought after.
I mean, that sound was very influential in molding the sound that came out later, because it was sounds that really were new. I mean, that was very new at the time.
Yes, and that's the sound we really get remembered for when people think of the Yard. But, you know, people like you think of us, you probably remember that sound, don't you? The sound we got on the hit.
Right. Even, like, the thing with Jimmy Page is he even started his bowing with using the cello bow back in the Yardbirds' time, and even his dress, the way he dressed and stuff, it was all, like, all of that was formed in the Yardbirds before Led Zeppelin.
Yes, exactly. Don't get confused, you know. It was a great song to do. Well, you know the origin. It comes from a New York folk singer called Jake Holmes.
Mm-hmm.
And it was his song, and we as the Yardbirds did our version of it and made it into sort of a pretty rock classic. And, of course, the Zeppelin carried it further on. But it was a great song.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, listening, like, I haven't heard the Yardbirds music in a while. But like I said, I don't listen to the radio anymore, and I tend to favor quiet these days. I cherish any quiet time I have, so I don't listen to the radio as much as I have, but I grew up listening to this stuff. This is, you know, like I said, in the 70s, this is the stuff I heard all the time.
Yeah.
So it actually, I mean, lyrically, some of this stuff influenced my songwriting in the early days, too, because I listen and I hear the way that words were used and phrasing and subject matter, and it was just, that was kind of the way, I think a lot of people use the same, you know, that this kind of philosophical subject matter in some of the songs, and you know, it was this, you know, questioning of things that was happening back then. And I think that was part of the influence for me, too, is the questioning of things.
Yeah, but that's a great motivation, I think. It makes it more interesting, you know?
Now, I read also that one of the first versions of Beck's Bolero came about kind of as a jam back with the Yardbirds days.
Well, it wasn't really us. I mean, he stepped out of the group and invited, I think it was Jimmy Page played along with him, and it was Keith Moon, you know, from The Who.
Uh-huh.
And I imagine it was John Paul Jones on bass. So I think that was the lineup. So it was Jeff and Jimmy anyway from the group.
you were part of this scene for a long time. Now, you stuck with the Yardbirds the whole time that the Yardbirds were in the original existence. And, you know, everybody went on to form other bands. Now, do you feel like you should have moved on to something more? Or do you feel like sticking with the Yardbirds was the right thing to do? I mean, because, like I said, you know, Eric Clapton went on to form various bands. Beck went on to his solo career in many other bands. And the big one was Jimmy Page went on to start Led Zeppelin. And it seems like the Yardbirds kind of got left in the dust after a while. And that's what ultimately led to the breakup of the band, because it was like, it seemed like it had run its course, maybe. Do you feel like you should have moved on earlier? Or
Not necessarily. I think the Yardbirds were strong enough to, it's a strong enough repertoire to sort of keep going if possible. But I've done, you know, I formed with Keith Renaissance, and then we had another band, Illusion, and we did the Box of Frogs. So I've done other things, and I've done my solo project too. So, you know, I like singing and, but it's more difficult for a drummer, I think. If you're a guitar player, yeah, then you can. It's more difficult for a drummer to change his role.
Yeah, I guess so. You don't, you just can't pick up your drums and sit in on a jam very easily. You just, you know, they kind of have to come to your house for that.
Well, I like to sing, you know, and I like the singer-songwriter role, you know, singing singing songs and talking about various subjects, you know, philosophical, and but it's quite different. But, you know, not many people really realise that I do that, and that they always want to see me as the Yardbird drummer.
Did any of them ask you to come along? Like, you know, when I know, like, when Jimmy Page was forming Led Zeppelin, he was looking for a drummer. Did he ever consider you as a drummer?
Well, I think we'd already made that, you know, we made that change. We committed to doing, Keith and I had committed to being together, and I don't think we wanted to go in onto that music at that time, you know. Well, we didn't realise Zeppelin were going to be so huge, to be honest, but why not? Because they were, you know, they were good, great musicians.
How come Renaissance didn't last as long as it probably should have? Do you ever think about getting Renaissance back together?
Well, they did, actually, because they kept going with Annie Haslam as the singer. So they did keep going all that time, probably not so well known, but they did some nice thing. They did a lot of albums. If you look them up, you'll see they might probably did about 10 albums.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize they were around that long. It seems like they came and went very quickly.
No, they kept going, and they kept the same sort of sound, but they had their different lineups. Bit like us, you know. I think they still play. I think they still do the odd tour, and they probably play on the cruises as well, like us.
That seems to be the place that people are playing these days. It seems like everybody I talk to is playing these cruises, and it's just I've thought about it, and I'm like, I don't think I could play a cruise because I'd get seasick. I don't do well on boats.
It's quite easy, and it's very well. I didn't think cruises were going to be so much fun. You know, I feel the same as you at one time. It's actually very well done, and it's well organised and very smooth, and everything's really nice. And there's some nice people come on it. You know, all the old Flower Power people.
Oh yeah, that's where they can find their like-minded folks. It's just coming out to the cruise. It's kind of like a big reunion all the time.
Exactly, and it's a nice energy. People love it. Love the old songs, you know.
Because that's the good stuff. That's why it's the only place to get the good stuff nowadays. I mean, drummers nowadays are mostly computerized.
Well, yeah. That's sad, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I appreciate drummers that actually play drums. It's just, you know, most of the music nowadays is just this, you know, very monotonous beat that's pulled off a computer, and if it varies, it's just a little fill that's pulled off a computer. It's nothing human about it.
I hate the auto-tune as well.
Oh, yeah, that's another thing, so.
That's a terrible sound.
I mean, it was amazing. I listened to the sound that you got with a four-piece. I mean, it was just the four of you. I mean, it was just this amazing sound you got with the four pieces. And it was everybody had a part that really, you know, a strong part. And that was what made the band great. You had strong parts. Each person had these really, really important parts that they played. And nowadays, it's not so much like that. It's just a lot of fill-up, and it's just a lot of stuff.
Yeah, if someone asks me for you know, what's a good new band, I'm hopeless. I can't think of anybody.
No, me neither. I'm not really a big fan. I stick with the older stuff. You played, I mean, you did the rounds like every other band. You did a lot of the TV shows and a lot of the concerts and the touring and stuff. You came around as like the same time as the Rolling Stones and the Beatles and, you know, all of the bands, the Animals and bands like that. I mean, you must have done some co-headlining tours with these bands, didn't you?
Oh, yes. We played with the Beatles. We played with the Rolling Stones. We played with the Kinks, the Who. Yeah, most of the best bands we shared bills with.
Do you have any good stories from those days?
Well,
that you're not embarrassed by, or you're not going to get you in trouble.
you might want to check out my book, John. I did a book called Nobody Told Me, which is a few years old. It's still quite popular. It still sells books, you know. And I've got a lot of stories in there. We actually played once with a drum story. We played with the Beatles once in Paris, and we were the only English bands on. You know, they had a whole lot of French group, and we shared the back line to make things easier. So we were playing in a stadium. So I played on Ringo's Ludwig drums, and it was in the days when they didn't used to mic up the drums, so I used to hit them quite hard, you know. I think you know what's coming. I got to the last song, and I noticed I'd broken his snare drum. And I thought, oh my God, broken Ringo's snare drum, I can't believe it. I was so embarrassed, you know, and got to the end of the song, and the roadie came up and said, oh, don't worry, you know, there's no problem, I can mend it. And Ringo waved his fist at me, you know, in a joke, so it was the end, but it was very embarrassing.
Yeah, those old days of sound must have been interesting. I mean, they really didn't have the PA systems or the monitor systems you have today. And I see the videos where people had the two mics taped together, one for the monitor, one for the front of house. And, you know, most of the time you were singing through a guitar amp, and the guitar amps just used the sound on stage, and it was just this garbled mix a lot of times, so you never really got a great live sound.
No, I know, and when I played sometimes, I couldn't even hear myself. I couldn't hear the drums.
Yeah, it was crazy back then. I don't know how, and I watch days back then when, you know, because you rely on the monitors. When I'm playing, you rely on, you know, the monitor to hear, like, what's going on, especially, you know, the beat of the bass and the drum to keep time. And if you can't hear those are kind of, you kind of lose yourself. And I don't know how you folks could do that back then. I mean, that shows you the skill of the band, is how they stayed together without really hearing what they were playing or hearing what they were singing, too.
Mind you, the hearing is suffered now, John. You know, I've got a lot of tinnitus now.
Oh, I've got that, and that sucks. I feel bad for anybody who's got that, because that doesn't go away.
No, it's horrible.
I wear earplugs nowadays for just about everything. I mean, I've worn them for many years, but it was, you know, the damage was done in my younger days.
Yes, I have to wear earplugs when I play.
Right.
The sound is so much better than it was, you know, if you can hear everything, you've got that nice monitor, and it's so different.
And you don't have to play as loud as you used to do either.
No, exactly. You don't have to smash the kit. You know, you've got the nice sound already.
How long do you think you're going to be doing the Yardbirds? I mean, you just mentioned that, it, you know, the tour, you took on a little bit too much this tour. I mean, how long do you want to do it? That's probably the question.
I don't know. I'm just seeing. You know, I'm just really, every time I go out, I'm experimenting, to be honest. See how hard it is, but we might change our show slightly and have like more of a history thing, you know, a talking thing with slideshow and obviously with the band playing songs, but describing what happened, you know, and where we played and pictures of where we used to play and, you know, all the people that used to play with us and much more of a sort of lecture type of thing.
Those are actually quite popular. I enjoy those, you know, mixed in with the music and stuff. I've seen quite a bit of those, and they're not even intentionally like that. Sometimes it's just the performers will just tell stories in between, just kind of, that's the way it goes. It wasn't even billed that way, but it's just the way the show tends to, it naturally evolved, and because people enjoy the stories. I mean, I know why, personally, do.
I think they do, and they love those old anecdotes.
I mean, that's the only place you're going to hear them. I mean, like you said, you have a book, you know, you read them, but people, like, that's different than hearing them right from the horse's mouth, basically.
It's the way we could go, you know. We'll watch this space, John.
So you're coming up, you're going to be playing the Narrows in Fall River in a couple of weeks, and so what will the show be like for the Narrows show?
Well, we'll do our usual. We play all the hits, most of them anyway. We do some blues covers, we do Smokestack Lightning, you know, the old Howling Wolf song, we do our version of it, and we do a couple of newer songs, Box of Frogs song we play, which was, you know, in the 80s, and so, it's a good show. They're good musicians, too.
Most of these people, now your lead singer's been with you for 30 years.
Yes.
Anybody else in the band have that longevity as well?
No, most of the band now have been around for a few years, about 7 or 8 years. I think the newest guy is the guitar player, Godfrey Townsend, who's a lovely guy, and he's a great player, and he's played with people like Jack Bruce and some very good people, John Entwistle. So he knows his stuff.
You said you're going to be playing most of the hits. Is there anything that you leave out that people have wanted to hear?
Sometimes there's a song we put, maybe like Good Morning Little Schoolgirl or Certain Girl, or maybe Still I'm Sad we don't do. You know, there's always one that somebody wants to hear, you know, that we leave out.
Is there a reason you leave it out, or is it just because it just doesn't get covered? Is it, you know, is it because it's hard to replicate on stage?
No, I think it's just the time element, you know, playing, we don't want to play on too long, you know. Or we all collapse.
Yeah, no, I get it. It's, you know, people really don't understand how physically taxing performing is. It really takes a lot out of you that people don't understand, because you're reaching deep within yourselves to really put on a good performance.
Yes, I know, but you feel it later, you know, you feel it like the next day.
Well, the adrenaline kicks in, you know, you're having a great time, you're moving around, and then the next day it's like, oh, what did I do? I've been playing for about 50 years now, and I'm like in that kind of stage of my life, like how long, I mean, I'm figuring out how long I have to play to live, yeah. But I'm figuring out, trying to figure out how long I'm actually going to be able to physically play. That's the question. I mean, I'll play forever, but physically the limitations are becoming, you know, more profound.
Tell me about it.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, as a drummer, I mean, the drummer in my band is 71 years old, and he complains.
Yeah, fortunately, the music keeps you young.
Hopefully, because, you know, drumming is like aerobic exercise.
Yeah, it is. Apparently, your drummers are very fit, you know, they did some experiments.
Well, it's, you know, you play, you're the one who's really constantly moving for the whole period of the show. You're driving the beat for the whole time. You know, you're not skipping notes, you're constantly going.
Yeah, I know. I must be pretty fit to be able to do it.
Well, I hope so. Hopefully you can go on for as long as you want to play, and as long as people want to see you, because that's the important thing. As long as you want to do it and you can do it, that's what counts.
Thank you, John. That's lovely.
Well, do you play any? I mean, you said you've had some solo stuff. Does anybody incorporate any of the solo stuff into the show?
Yeah, we could do, but it's a little bit, you know, it's a bit light. Maybe a bit too light for the Yardbirds, but you never know. We might try a couple.
You might be surprised at people's response to new stuff. You never know.
Yeah, we'll try it. We'll try it out, John.
Just because I said so.
Yeah, I'll tell him.
I guess I'll take over the Peter Grant management.
Yeah.
I'm not quite as big and intimidating as he was.
Great.
Well, I wish you a lot of luck.
Well, thank you, John. That's very nice of you.
Well, thank you for giving me a shout across the pond, and I really do appreciate the time talking to you, and it's a pleasure.
Okay, a pleasure for me, too.
All right, well, thank you very much, and you keep at it for a long time to come.
Thank you,
Take care of yourself.
Yeah, thank you. Bye.
Okie dokie. Thanks to Jim McCarty for being part of this episode of the Roots Report podcast. The Yardbirds will be at the Narrow Center for the Arts in Fall River on March 21st. For more, over under sideways down to narrowcenter.org. The Roots Report podcast is presented by Motif Magazine and sponsored by Rhode Island Blood Center, Mother Earth Wellness, Graysale Brewing, Trinity Brewhouse, Ballet RI, and R1 Indoor Karting. Thanks for listening.